All right, this is such a special episode to film today. These are not only inspirations to me and hugely influential people, but very, very dear friends of mine. So Dr. Frank Sutter, Dr. Holly Furlong, thank you for joining us today. I'm going to let you guys introduce yourselves and what you're up to currently. However, wanted to kind of highlight that you were both instrumental in my own health and healing journey. Dr. Frank Sutter had a holistic functional medicine practice as a doctor of chiropractic medicine, doctor of oriental medicine, and he was really one who helped me understand how much could be impacted through diet, through supplements, really got me away from a lot of surgeries and procedures. We'll tell a little bit more about that story. Holly was working with him at the time, and they're both incredibly talented with their healing gifts, so I'm beyond thrilled to have you guys on today. I'd love to, if you could tell us a little bit more about what you're doing currently, what you're up to. So we'll start with you, Holly.
Perfect. So Dr. Holly Furlong, Frank and I met in chiropractic school. I actually recruited him, but that's maybe a story for another time. I was in practice for about 8-9 years. And part of that time I was practicing with Frank and, you know, very passionate about functional medicine, lifestyle medicine, acupuncture, exercise, those types of things to really help the patient. And then about 5-6 years ago, I transitioned out of clinical practice for a variety of reasons, but one of the biggest reasons is I'm very passionate about the patient experience and wanted to have an opportunity to, instead of having direct clinical care with the patient, wanting to have a more broader effect. So I transitioned to concierge medicine, where I was instrumental in helping primary care physicians implement a concierge practice, which is a membership program, but really help the physician help with their burnout, work-life balance, but also for the patient to get improved access and a better patient experience. And then currently I'm actually working with Invera Health. We are a healthcare center or call center focusing on access. So allowing patients to, we schedule follow-up transitions of care, those types of things. Again, a focus for me, passionate about the patient experience, improving the patient's access.
Thanks, Holly. And I'm super fascinated. I'm really excited to kind of dig into what that means, that passion for the patient experience. But before we do that, we'll let Frank introduce himself. And just to set the stage for anybody listening, this is probably going to get ridiculous at some point. If I didn't make it clear how good friends we are, we've had a lot of fun together. So just bear with us if we go a little off course at times. But Frank, please tell us what you've been up to since having your practice in Chicago.
Great. And first of all, thank you for having us on. We always love the opportunity to talk about ourselves, but more importantly, the kind of impact we'd like to have within the healthcare landscape. So, as Holly explained, we met in school and I launched that chiropractic clinic in Chicago, ran that for about 7+ years, and then left to join Harvard Business School as the associate director in what is called the Healthcare Initiative, which is really focused on management innovation across the healthcare diaspora, including life sciences, pharmaceutical, biotech, medical devices, payer systems, insurance, as well as care delivery models and digital health. So, and
hold on, Mr. Smarty Pants.
Okay.
What's a diaspora for? Supposed for?
I know. I was like, what is that?
Yeah. Translate across, your intelligence, please.
Say across the healthcare ecosystem, or okay, maybe the umbrella of healthcare. So, you know, we look at the world through sort of industries and sectors. So, healthcare is really kind of a sector, and under that umbrella sector, you've got these various verticals, industries. So that's where life sciences, care delivery, payer systems, medical devices, and diagnostics fall under. Mm-hmm. So that is my smarty pants phrase. My apologies.
Okay. So no worries.
So, but the point of what we're trying to do is the so-called triad of health, which is what Holly had talked about a moment, is how do we improve access, increase access to care, how do we reduce costs of care, and how do we ultimately improve the health outcome for the patient? And if we can, and you need, that's a three-legged stool, you need all three to really move the needle on healthcare innovation?
Yeah, I'm super excited to get into some of the research that's being done, some of the stories that you've encountered. But before we do that, I'd like to know a little bit more about your personal why. So, you know, why did you have the inspiration to get into healthcare in the first place and have stayed there? Like, help us understand, like, why. And you guys have always, like, been public about taking a different approach, being passionate about patient experience, doing things differently. So why is it so important to you to be disruptive in this space? And Holly, I'll turn it back to you.
For me, I mean, it was my own personal health journey. I was 20 years old and couldn't eat anymore. I lost 15 pounds, and every doctor I went to, you know, they just wanted to increase my antacids and just wasn't getting any better. And I was fortunate at the time to actually be working at a chiropractic university. And I actually wanted to be a social worker. That's kind of where it comes from. I've always wanted to help people. And I stumbled into chiropractic. And on that journey, I met a physician, Dr. Strail, who is a mentor and amazing to so many people in the field in natural health. He healed me. And very simple, just listening, diet changes, supplementation, just, you know, very simple changes, but it had such an effect on me. And that I just saw so many people who were struggling, friends, family, that, you know, from little things, you know, just little chronic, you know, allergies, digestive issues, to bigger issues, chronic pain and those types of things. And I wanted to be able to provide that kind of care to them. And so that's how I ended up here.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So you had a passion for giving back and paying it forward. Frank, please fill us in kind of on your why and when, why you have the passion for being a disruptor in this industry.
You know, like, it's not very dissimilar from Holly, which is how we fell in love. So it was a lot of stomach issues, you know, just all of the problems. We'll skip the details because that's not fun. But looking for ways, what can I do to manage this? And the same story, either I was told it was just these garbage can diagnoses, you know, it's one of these terms we use that doctors don't know how to treat, things like irritable bowel syndrome, fibromyalgia, dermatitis, premenstrual syndrome. Like, these things are just like, you know, they kind of just sort of say it's in your head, not a lot we can do with it. Often prescribe antidepressants, you know, particularly for things like fibromyalgia. And it makes you feel like you're going crazy. So to try and find an alternative approach was something on my mind. And I considered naturopathic medicine as well as chiropractic. And, you know, but naturopathic isn't recognized in every state. So that's sort of one way that, you know, we focus on functional medicine, and then we would practice under our chiropractic license to be able to implement things like medical nutrition intervention. So.
Yeah, I love that you said that. I mean, I share that perspective, as you guys know how deep my health journey has been. My journey to health, it's never ending. But yeah, the amount of times, like, I've really struggled with my mental health as well. And most of that struggle has been from people repeatedly, even people I love in my personal life, but definitely doctors telling me, you're insane. And women make these things up because they want painkillers, and I can't give you painkillers. I'm like, I don't want them. Like, if I want drugs, I'll go get them. Seriously.
Not that hard.
Like, it's not that hard. Painkillers aren't the most fun kind. Like, let's be honest. I don't want drugs. I'm not drug seeking. I want to be healthy. And they would just say that. And then, you know, even like people very near and dear to me would be like, I don't get it. You look really healthy. And I'm like, I do, but I eat very well. I drink tons of water. I wear sunscreen every day. I work out all, like, I'm doing so much for a healthy lifestyle, and I'm still connected to my body. I still know when something doesn't feel right. And there's not enough people who, in our traditional healthcare model, who can just hear that and say, oh, there's something going on connected with you as a person that we're not understanding yet. So kind of, Holly, with that said, you know, you've mentioned really being passionate about the patient experience. So how are you kind of uniquely positioned to help impact the patient experience with what you're doing today?
I mean, currently, I mean, a big problem that, I mean, most patients have probably experienced when you just call to make an appointment or follow up from your appointment with your provider, you either have long hold times or you leave a message and then you hope someone will call you back. And a lot of that is due just to the strain and the inability, not that it's the practice's fault, but it's just the way the system is set up. They don't have the resources, and, you know, patients really do want to speak to someone and be heard. And so, you know, my role now, what I'm able to do is really, you know, provide that. I mean, we have, you know, places where people have a 25 minute average hold time. I mean, who wants to wait for 25 minutes to even just talk about, can I schedule an appointment, or did you get my medication refill, or those types of things. And so right now, I mean, I'm able to help is really implement the idea that you can talk to a person. Now, you know, we are limited. The person's not clinical, so they can't provide maybe all that the patient wants, but I think it helps to just improve the patient experience because people just want to be heard. They just want to know or acknowledged, because right now I feel like a lot of people feel like they're just not heard and they're just lost and they want someone to listen to them. I mean, true. And if you ask our agents, a lot of them just spend sometimes 45 minutes talking to a patient. It has nothing to do with about scheduling. It's just to listen.
Just being compassionate.
Mm-hmm. Empathy.
They're lonely and they're scared and they're in pain and they can't get answers. And you get to the point where you're like, I just need anybody to listen to me because this is scary. Like, mm-hmm. I get it. I've been there, and I think we all have. And in fact, I think we all have the audience, everything. Like, if you haven't had a really significant health scare, you know, count your blessings. Most people have. And that's when you get confronted with just how broken the system is. And you know, Frank, you bring a really interesting perspective. Would you like me to call you Dr. Sutter? I can't.
Oh, you don't need to do that. No.
I can't.
It makes me uncomfortable.
Good. I mean, good that you don't.
Okay. Yeah, you can call me Frankie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Just had to get that clear, but good. Yeah, I mean, I think you bring a really interesting perspective, both as a business owner and a doctor and a smarty pants. You know, you kind of have that well-rounded view where oftentimes, you know, doctors don't have the experience with being a business owner or vice versa. So I'd love it if you could tell us a little bit about your journey as a healer and, you know, what was your experience dealing with the healthcare system and insurance, and how did it impact you as a business owner specifically and as a doctor?
Oh gosh. Yeah, that was quite a journey. You know, there was a lot to do at once, you know, upon graduating, getting your license finally, and then like, now I'm gonna see a patient. And how do I get the money? Like, because, you know, it comes down to that. You know, you want to heal, and that's, of course, what this is all about.
But you want to eat, too?
You also have to pay your bills, you know, and you got to pay back student loans, you know. And, we had multiple six figures in student loans, and I think I can share that. Holly and I both have that, you know. Mm. We're talking close to $200,000. It's a huge investment.
House I'll never live in.
Yeah. So you've got to think about like that healing hand and the business hand. And there's a little sort of merry war betwixt the two. You know, how do you reconcile both? And it's a constant challenge. But the steps are, you've got to become in network with insurance companies. You know, you've got to become a provider with Blue Cross Blue Shield, United Healthcare, Aetna, these other healthcare payer systems. And it's a lot to do. And, you know, especially when you're on your own and getting started. So there's many, many steps to that. But then, of course, all the other aspects of starting a business and a commercial lease and managing that. And then marketing, you know, how do people know who I am and what can I do for them? So there were many steps along the way, you know, but then you have some wins, you have some losses. The losses usually being, you know, learning exactly how to work with an insurance company. It's not easy. There's a lot of terminology and it's very confusing. They do not want to part with the money. That is their job, you know, to...
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that, though, because you were kind of candid with me about my own case, you know, being a patient of yours and a friend. Yeah. I got the inside scoop. And I think it's like that was one of the things that started to turn my thinking. And it's not the only, but started to turn my thinking before I had been, well, as a patient, they screw me over all the time. This happens. They change the date so that it falls into the next year and doesn't, you know, my max out calendar. But your perspective, I was like, oh, wait, so they're screwing the doctors over too. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe we can use that example or anything you're comfortable sharing. I give you permission to share my personal story.
I was just going to share with Frank when we worked together. I don't know if you remember, but there was one patient that Blue Cross said, all of a sudden said I was no longer a provider. And so they wouldn't pay me for the patient. And but they were paying me for all the other Blue Cross patients, like every other Blue Cross patient I got paid for. I submitted my paperwork probably six times, the same paperwork. And they continued to say, you're just not a provider. You're not, we don't recognize you. And eventually, I mean, I just, the time I was putting in was not going to be worth the time, the money I was going to receive when they finally recognized that I was a provider. When I kept telling them, I was like, you literally sent me a check for 10 other patients.
Just not that one. They're not partnering with that. They're not partnering with that money.
And the number of hours that took to just do those appeals, because it's not just hit a button, resubmit, you know, insurance claim. Mm-hmm. That's not how it happens. It is rewriting, filling out the form. It's many, many steps, you know, and eventually you just get, you just break down. And, you know, as you said, Nikki, you've already given me permission to talk about your case.
Mm-hmm.
And,
go for it.
You know, and that's how we met and that's how we fell in love. But, you know, you had suffered that traumatic injury, the diving injury, and shattered both feet many years ago. And, you know, if remembering the whole case properly, obviously correct me if I have some details wrong, but, you know, you would get the nerve ablation done in your spine to minimize the neuralgia and the pain that you were experiencing in your feet. And you would get these several times a year, right? Every month or two?
Yeah, I mean, I had at least 3 to 12 a year, but like when we were working together, they would order a series of 6 to 12 and then usually repeat that series. So like I could have 30 in a year. That was rare, but I had them every year, at least a series of 3 in the winter. Cold was a trigger for my nerve pain. And so that was kind of where I was at when I first met you, was on the high end of that, where like it would be a series of 6 and we might repeat that series 3 times and do a total of 18, like every other week. So you were just either having a procedure or recovering from said procedure. And then, you know, trying to live my life in between, like jumping on planes, I'd be like, well, I can't lift this into the overhead. you know, I had to make business meetings and make it happen. But like, that was kind of my life, was just trying to manage that pain. The condition that I had, CRPS, RSD, is known as a suicide disease. It's known for taking a lot of people's lives, nothing wrong with it, but just the severity of the nerve pain. And yeah, so it kind of became like, I felt like I was a slave to that. It did help with the pain, but it was not a way to live my life. And so, yeah, but I'd love to hear a little bit more about kind of what you shared with me about the way that insurance handled that on your end, as you were kind of helping provide real healing for me.
Yeah, we had, you know, we tried a number of things, and just a minor correction, I'm not actually a doctor of oriental medicine, but I did take several hundred hours of acupuncture. Okay. And I would usually position myself as someone who would do needling, because I didn't do some of the other aspects of oriental medicine, which would include tongue diagnosis, pulse diagnosis, and some other aspects of it. So, but with you, we had talked about it and said, okay, you know, let's try some of these needling techniques and see if we can yield a response. And you seem to take to it really well. And you, every time you came back, like, I can't believe it, I'm not having any pain. And so here we were submitting, and I think they were along the lines of $45 a visit. I mean, we're not talking major. These are not the same of those nerve procedures you talked about, getting 3 to 30 per year. This is $45. So we had a series of maybe 10 sessions initially that we submitted, and it just, all of them denied. They denied every, even though acupuncture was a covered procedure under your plan. And we continued that whole year. And at the end of the year, our office never got reimbursed for that. It never, they denied it repeatedly. The amount of time that went into those appeals was over the top. And that was just a punch in the gut. You know, even when we explained how much money we had saved them because you were able to cancel a lot of those nerve blocking procedures, that I can only imagine were well into the thousands of dollars per procedure. Mm-hmm. And here we were just talking about $45, and they didn't see the value. They didn't see the savings. They did not care. So,
well, they have a contract. They have a contract with Rush Medical Center where said procedures were done, and there's a lot of people who benefited from the thousands of dollars per procedure on that end. So they don't care if it screws people like you and me over. But yeah, that makes me so sad though, because as you know, giving up, teaching me about like gluten, dairy, inflammatory foods, and the acupuncture was tremendously healing for me. And I'm sorry to say that I was a really bad financial investment for you. Fortunately, I have an amazing heart, so I made up for it by giving you my heart and soul instead.
The takeaway is not that you were a bad investment. It's that in the insurance model and the way those appeal systems are implemented, that is a terrible system. You are a wonderful system. So.
Oh, thank you. Well, Holly, I want to go back to you and kind of your perspective. Like, did you have any similar aha moments? Like, and I don't know to what extent you can share these patient mm-hmm. stories, but whatever you're comfortable sharing, like a moment where you're like, I love what I'm doing and I went into this to heal and to help people with my passion for service, but like, what WTF is going on with the system? Like, why is it this hard to help?
Yeah, I mean, I think honestly, just from the provider side, I mean, I see so many great providers that transition out of clinical care because they get frustrated because they don't want to compromise, but then they can't pay their bills. And then it's a constant struggle. And, and I saw a lot of patients, that would come to me and I'd be like, these are the things that we can do. And they're like, well, insurance doesn't cover it, so I can't do them. But I guess, I'll just go back to taking whatever medication that's approved for, pharmaceuticals or things like that. And, just the struggle. I mean, that's part of the reason, I see new providers going out there and I commend them because they are going to always run into that. And it's not just natural health, it's traditional primary care. It's, all sorts of providers because they want to go above and beyond and the system doesn't allow them.
Mm-hmm. That's so sad. And, I want to get back to your time spent as the concierge care, and perhaps you can start with explaining a little bit about what mm-hmm. concierge care is, in case anybody's not familiar. And then, help me understand or help us understand what are the most common questions or concerns that the average patient expresses when you're positioning that change to concierge care?
Yeah, so concierge medicine, really came as a response to insurance changing. So it's a model that's created probably about 25 years ago as insurance, most people knew, because I feel like when we were younger, you were like, oh, you barely had a copay, different, things like that. And then this came out for primary care physicians that wanted to spend time. Like they typical primary care physician, to keep your practice going, you need to see 20 patients a day. That's 15 minutes, maybe less than that, a patient. And there are a lot of providers that understand that they need to spend the time with the patient and listen to them. And so these models go from a typical primary care physician will see about 2,000 patients annually. They'll drop their patient panel to about 400 to 600. And to do that, they have to be, there has to be a financial compensation to that. So there is a membership model. So the patient will pay anywhere from $1,500 to $3,000 annually. And that provides them, the ability to, have extended office visits. They have same day, next day priority scheduling. Because right now, for most patients, if you want to see your doctor today or tomorrow, you go to urgent care. You can't see the person that knows you, knows your history, those types of things. Then you have the ability to call or text your provider after hours. I have so many stories of patients that were like, I was traveling, or, a story, there was a patient that their son had a bloody nose and it was bleeding for 2 hours. They had tried to go to the urgent care. They couldn't get in. They called their, concierge physician. He talked them over the phone and, he was able to resolve it. And that's like an acute situation, but then there's others. This is kind of a funny story. I had a patient who you put your medicine down and on the table and, you put it out and then you go to take it. Well, he did that, and the phone rang, and he started to talk, and he realized that he had also put his dog's medication out, and he had taken his dog's pain medication.
it must have been a wild ride.
I know. So he was like, he immediately, you know, was able to call his concierge physician, just, you know, saying, hey, I just took my dog's medication. Should I go to the ER? Is that, like, you know, something that I need to do? And it's not just, like I said, for the urgent, it's just having that person to consult with. I mean, I make a comment all the time that Frank's my concierge physician. Like, I'm like, oh my God, this is happening. Like the other day I fell and I was like, I hit my head. Do you think maybe I have a concussion? Should I go get it checked out? Like, you really, it enables the patient to have more of a partnership and a relationship with their provider that the traditional healthcare model doesn't allow. Unfortunately, there is a cost to it. So obviously, you know, it's not available to all patients. The majority of the providers don't make that decision lightly. A lot of them institute like scholarship programs where they'll take on patients that, you know, financially can't afford to be members, but they want to help them as kind of to offset that. But, you know, the goal for in the end, even though the patient will say, you know, you're taking my doctor away, why are you taking my doctor away from me? You know, I would always tell them, well, your option is that they would retire and close their practice and not be able to, you know, be your physician, and you'd have to find another physician, or this is an option that your doctor, you know, can still stay. And a lot of them don't realize that their doctor is only getting paid like $45 a visit. Right? So you go to see your primary care physician, you spend 45 minutes. A lot of patients think, oh, he just made $300 or she made $300. Right. But sometimes they just got $45 for that.
Churn and burn often.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was something I noticed being friendly with you guys and, you know, going out to happy hours and just kind of spending time socially. That was something I noticed was the very real toll it took on, well, whatever we did. I like to have fun.
Yeah, we do too.
Yeah. Balance. So, but that was something I would notice, like, it just takes a very real toll. You go into the healing arts because you're passionate about the whole person and listening, but you have to run it as a business. I mean, we all have bills to pay. We all have to eat. And then kind of constantly walking that line of like, all right, I can like hit my business goals if I give people 10 minutes or 7 minutes per time. But like that taking a toll inside. And Frank, I know you eventually shuttered your doors and have expressed that you're thinking about going back into practice now that you're in Amsterdam in a different healthcare. I'd love it if you'd share a little bit about that decision with us and what made you open to re-entering the world of being in healing and working directly with patients in a different country and in a different system.
Sure. Earlier, I think Holly alluded to it, the change in the payment structure, you know, initially, again, it was 90% of the revenue was from insurance companies and 10% was from patient pay. And that was like their $10 co-pays, or maybe they had a small deductible. And then almost, you know, 8 or so years later, it was the exact opposite. 10% actually was paid by the insurance companies and 90% was patient out of pockets as companies started implementing, you know, high deductible health plans. And that allowed, you know, patients to also have show some responsibility and, you know, be responsible for their healthcare spending. And that, I think that's a terribly flawed approach. So there's layers to that. I don't know how in depth we want to go, but it was challenging because as we talked about the healing hand and the business hand, you know, I was suddenly looking at what you just mentioned, Nikki, was, you know, how much time do I need to spend per hour? You know, technically, the square footage of a clinic, you know, you got to make so much money per hour, per square foot, in order to pay your bills, to pay your staff, to pay back your student loans. And I started looking at wealthier and wealthier patients. And I was like, it was getting cringeworthy. I was like, oh God, like when we started looking at marketing models, and I hated it. Cause on the one hand, nothing felt better making money, helping people. But on the other hand, nothing felt more slimy than making money, helping people. It
When you have to, when you're forced to profile said people.
Yeah, I just couldn't, I couldn't reconcile. I just, so.
Well, you know, and that's, sorry to interrupt, but that's one of the reasons that I loved when I was working in the concierge medicine space is because doctors are horrible at asking people for money because they, like he just said, he just felt cringeworthy. Like, you know, I just feel bad. I want to help you. I don't want to have that conversation. And one of the things I loved is because I wasn't their provider, but I had been there. I got to be that bridge of being like, you know, you're, the provider is worth it. This, their time is worth it. And, you know, being able to ask the patient, but I had so many conversations where doctors would be like, oh, we won't charge them. We'll give them a discount. And I'm like, no, they will pay. If you ask, cause they appreciate you, they love you, they adore you. You just have to ask. And a lot of providers, it's a very uncomfortable conversation because they care. It's not because they don't care. It's because they care.
My front desk staff like fired me from being at the front desk because once I heard a patient complaining about money, I'd be like, just write it off. Just write it off. Like, I'd be like, just write it off. Like, and they're like, stop it.
Like, this is a donation clinic.
Yeah, you gotta pay. You have to pay us too. Like, stop giving it away. So I did. I eventually stopped dealing with that. But yeah, I reached the point where I was like, I don't know if I'm contributing to the solution, I or if I'm just part of the problem, and it didn't feel great. So yes, I did sell my practice, and that's when I joined Harvard Business School. And then until recently, my husband had an opportunity to move to Amsterdam, and he works for a global consulting firm, and it was a terrific opportunity. So I'm still working remotely for Harvard. But quick story, my dog had a limp and I took him to a few vets and they wanted to do some exploratory surgery. And I was like, I don't want my dog being cut open without there being an actual diagnosis. So I took him to a chiropractor who adjusts dogs. And it was a rather strange moment watching my dog get adjusted. I was, you know, that wasn't easy, but in the end, it actually helped. But in terms of my career path, it was that chiropractor that said, you know, I heard you're a chiropractor. You know, there's only 270 of us in the Netherlands. You should really consider coming back into it. We need someone like you. And I thought I had closed that door. And once I learned the system here, how it's not the same insurance model. It's a different approach. And the same aspects of HIPAA and what insurance companies in the US can do, which is a post-payment audit where they audit all your files and then say to you, based on not all your files, audit like 50 of them and say, you know, based on these 50 files and this code you used in these 50 files, 20% of the time, your clinical documentation didn't support the use of that code. So we're going to need that money back. Oh, and by the way, we're going to extrapolate that 20% of that code used on all of your files going back 7 years. I think they've gotten it down to 5 years now. We're going to need that money back too. And because you've signed a provider agreement with that insurance company, there's nothing you can do about it. And that number could be 800,000, it could be 2.2 million. And they'll say, we can just deduct that from all of your future reimbursements, or you could pay us it now up front and we'll give you a 10% discount.
That's awful. Yeah, good. Because in that case, yeah. I do have $2.1 million sitting around, yeah, but not 2.2.
So that's an approach that would be that we know people that it's happened to, and it's, you know, fortunately, fingers crossed, never happened to us. But but it was, that was something that kept me awake at night. You know, if you ask like, what are you thinking of? I'm always like, I doing my own documentation is challenging. You know, what about other providers? What's Holly doing? You know, she's like,
she's got to be messing it all up. I know.
She's just copying and pasting stuff from, you know, Blue's Clues in there. I don't know. you know, it's those are the things that don't exist here. So that opened up my eyes to saying like, wow, I could actually go back into chiropractic and go back into helping people and doing what I really feel great about. Sign me up. And so, yes, I'm now in the midst of, I just passed my Dutch language exam. So I'm official basic speaker, A1.
Nice. Yay, congratulations.
Which I've got to pass that in order to be accepted into the Dutch Chiropractic Federation. And now that I am, I can now begin seeing patients. So.
Yay. Well, I'm thrilled for you, and that's so exciting. You know, you mentioned the system works very differently. Is there like kind of a brief way that you can explain? You explained the side on America very well and how it keeps you up at night and makes you worried. But then you said their system is structured so differently that it is more appealing to you to go back. Can you give us kind of a brief insight into how it works in the Netherlands?
Well, in general, in healthcare in the Netherlands, everybody has to have health insurance. So it's similar to what Obamacare was trying to be, so there's 100% coverage here. It is just mandatory, but it's also a centralized system. So when you go to a doctor and you give them your BSN number, which is like your social security number, they know who your insurance company is. And ours is through Michael's employer, but there are other ways that if you're self-employed, you can get insurance. So, but the premiums aren't insanely high because everybody is covered. So with chiropractic, it's kind of a separate plan. It falls under the alternative medicine plan. So many people choose to use it, and that would cover acupuncture, chiropractic, physical therapy, some of these other sort of ancillary, as they're referred to, professions or medical models. So with chiropractic, basically the patient pays, you know, roughly $50 per visit up front, and they will get reimbursed by their insurance company later. So based on their plan, some percent of that, we'll say 50 euros per visit. They might get 40 euros back. They might have a limit of 10 visits or 20 visits per year. But it's something that people are generally comfortable with. It's a pretty clear system. And once they get reimbursed, they don't have to give it back to the insurance company, you know, so.
Yeah, some things like I'm hearing different would be, one, there's total transparency. So you were like, you're going to pay 50% up front, then you submit a reimbursement and you get this much money back. Like, it, you know, So it's not like here, if we were to go about that route with the lack of transparency and pricing for healthcare services, like you might be surprised to get a $13,000 bill and somewhere else you get an $1,100 bill for the same thing. But also it sounds like the onus to do a little bit of administrative work is on each individual person when it's needed versus on the business owner or the healer saying, the provider end saying, all right, you do this reimbursement legwork, administrative work for however many patients you have at one time, which becomes unmanageable. You might have a medical need as a person a couple times a year and you file a couple pieces of paperwork versus it becomes your sole job is what it sounds like if you're a provider in America or can, or you're paying staff that it's their full job.
We'd spend hours a day because only the doctor can write the clinical documentation. We'd spend hours a day. And then we'd have an audit chart to make sure that, you know, is there a clinical note for every patient visit? We would audit ourselves periodically. And it's stressful.
Holly,
it's
Holly, I don't blame you for just putting Blue's Clues in there. That's what I I know you didn't. Holly, can you share with us on a lighter note, what's one of your favorite memories of being in practice in healthcare? I think we're talking about a lot of the things that aren't so fun, but I know that you guys really have a heart for it. So I'd love to hear some of your favorite patient stories or whatever you can share.
Well, I mean, I'm not even lying. One of my favorite practices was working with Dr. Frank Sutter. and that's just from the professional side. It was just a joy to work alongside, you know, a friend, but a colleague, and just passionate about building the practice together, the learning together, and those types of things. As for patients, I mean, I feel like I'm fortunate to have had some great patient experiences. I think a patient story that kind of always sticks out to me is actually my one of my last patients. So when I decided to transition to concierge medicine, I had to shut down my current practice. And there was one patient that when she came to see the office, she was never happy with the like carpet, and she didn't like really like the front desk staff, and she would come into the room, and I felt like we had, you know, she had some chronic pain issues, and we were working through nutritionally and with, you know, acupuncture and those types of things. And, but she was just always, it was so stressful. Every time she would come in, I'd be so worried. I'm like, what can I do to help her? What can I, you know, make help her have a great healing experience? And so I thought, oh, when I told her I was leaving practice, she'd be like, great. Like, okay, great, I'll just move on. And when I told her, she actually came in the room and just started sobbing. Aww. And because she was like, you're the first person that's ever listened to me. And that, you know, allowed me to, you know, you've reduced my pain, you've given me hope. And, you know, I'm devastated that you're leaving. And I don't know what to do. And I was, you know, where I was thinking she would maybe not even show up for her last appointment, you know.
Well, that's huge, like the impact that you have on people's lives, and you know that somebody would burst into tears at the thought of not seeing you again. I understand it because I know and love you, but that's really huge. Like that's got to be very soul fulfilling for you.
Yeah, well, because especially like I said, I didn't think I was having an effect, and you know that's one of the things when you're in practice and every day, you know, interacting with patients, you know, you give so much, so they take. And it's a good thing. You're giving your healing energy to that patient, but you have to fill the cup back up, mm-hmm. right? And you get filled up by those experiences. You know, the patient telling you, oh my gosh, I was able to do this for the first time. I mean, I had a patient that we're still good friends, actually, because we like weird mystery novels and books. And it's just like, you know, we connected on that
Gil
front. Yeah, for real.
You guys wave the same freak flags in the air. You're like, you're gonna let your freak flag fly? Yeah. Me too. We got the same flag.
Yeah. But I mean, he came to me in a boot and thought he would never walk again without pain. And we did, you know, kind of a lot of a bit of everything. And now, you know, he uses an orthotic and he walks fine, but then he knows when he, I actually taught him when he's having flare ups, what to do. So he does, you know, and we still communicate to the day, and he'll check in with me and saying, hey, this is happening, what should I do? And you know, those are the fulfilling relationships, because you know you make a difference, but they're also filling back your up your cup as well. It's a two-way street.
That's beautiful. Thank you. And I love hearing that like, because it is so important, anybody in the healing, like you must prioritize your own self-care or there's nothing left to give. And kind of along that vein, Frank, can you share a few accomplishments that maybe you're most grateful for along your journey as a healer?
Yeah, I think, you know, I guess accomplishments. Well, what
it can
is
be, it can be the impact that you've made. I mean, accomplishment is a very broad term. So like, I often encourage people to think through like moments where you're like, wow, I didn't know, like what Holly just shared, I didn't know I had that impact on people.
Well, I have two stories then.
Okay.
So one was a patient of mine, and she was just fabulous, but she was also a very heavy smoker and a very heavy drinker to the point that she drank a bottle and a half of wine every day.
Oh yeah,
Holly, you know who I'm talking about.
I loved her. She's always great. The last patient of the day. It was always fun.
Yeah, she was great, and she literally brought me a blingy wine glass as a gift. So
she sounds like fun.
I still have the wine glass to this day, and you know, because she just sort of barked at me really in the beginning. She's like, don't tell me to quit smoking and don't tell me to quit drinking. And I was like, I ain't telling you to do anything. And I was like, I said, you're here for some body pain and we're going to focus on that. And it's really a story of developing trust and meeting people where they're at. Because she's not a stupid person. You know, she worked, you know, she had an intelligent job, you know, but she had this addiction. And, so it had to, so establish trust and meet them where they're at. And so I had to sort of open up, you know, in order to establish trust, there has to be a little vulnerability. on the side of the person who's seeking that trust. And so, you know, I said, you know, Jeannie, I said, I used to smoke a pack a day too. And, you know, sometimes I drink a little too much. And we would, you know, that's how we started bonding. And
it's like Cruel Intentions. Everybody does it, just nobody talks about it.
It's true. So our conversations were, you know, we just tell silly drinking stories as I'm working on her back pain and her hip and knee pain and whatnot. And, you know, I just get her laughing. And so then we establish sort of a friendship. And then I was like, all right, Jeannie, we're not using last names. So,
you want to give her address out?
Yeah. Here's her social security number. So I was like, you know, listen, I said, you know, part of what's going on with you is, you know, you're sort of just in an inflamed state. So I can work on you mechanically, but we've got to bring that inflammation down. And so she said, all right, what do I got to do? And I was like, that bottle and a half, what could we do about not opening the second bottle? And she's like, oof, just one bottle. And I'm like, yeah, just one bottle a night, not a bottle and a half. All right. For you, I'll do it. Like, and that was how it initially started. And I was like, you know what? I wasn't even going to say something. You got to do it for yourself. And, you know, because that's not what it was about in the moment. It was, you know, she was doing it as a friend, you know, and I realize there's a lot that goes with addiction. And I'm not trying to say I'm terribly trained in dealing with substance abuse. And, but it was, like I said, it's a story of trust. But she came back a week later and she's like, I did it. And she's like, I only had 7 bottles this week and it was hard. And then she actually got down to 2 glasses, because then we got down to, can we make a bottle last 2 days? And I'm like, and then you're really like 2.5 glasses. I was like, and then that's not so bad. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I said, cigarettes, we'll work on that later. But it was, and this, you know, of course, we've lost touch, but, you know,
you also got her to change her diet. You remember?
Yeah. Like, oh yeah. Yeah.
She cut out things because you met her where she was at. You were like, okay, you don't have to just go gluten-free or whatever. You got a diet for her that was doable, and she started to see changes.
She felt in her skin changed, like she looked brighter and clearer. And she didn't, you know, she didn't quit drinking completely. It was something that she could manage. And so, well,
change is scary. Like, we are so, so change resistant. It's usually the biggest fear, which is silly, because oftentimes the change is what we want. The result of the change is what we want. The change itself, we're like, no, that's too scary. So, like, your ability to just be truly empathetic, meet her where she was, show up and like cheer her on is what opened that door. And I think that's beautiful. And like a story that needs to be told more is that like there's people out there and the system is not serving them and forcing them out of business in some cases, who are willing to go to these depths to help somebody go from a bottle and a half of wine a day to 2.5 glasses a night. That's tremendous. And all of the positive health outcomes that came as a result of all the changes she made, I'm sure she had some pretty miraculous health improvements as a result.
Those type of lifestyle changes.
Yeah.
I think self-empowerment is key with just about every aspect of life. And real quick, the second story, also about inflammation, was I think I alluded to the story with you earlier, Nikki, but that was a patient. She, you know, we did a bunch of blood work on her, and there was various markers in that blood work that showed she had systemic inflammation. And I told that to her, and she looked at me so perplexed. She's like, I have inflammation in me. And I said, yeah, it's in you. And she's like, it's inside me. And I was like, yeah, it's, yeah, of course. Yeah, that's absolutely where it is. And and then she just looked lost. And I was like, when you hear the word inflammation, what does that mean to you? And she's like, you know, like fire, like flammable, like sparks. I've got inside me. And I was like, oh, okay. Now I'm recognizing the confusion and the miscommunication here. And I explained what inflammation was. You know, you twist your ankle, it blows up, it gets warm and red. I'm like, that's inflammation. And she was like, oh. I didn't know that. And this was not an unintelligent person either. She just wasn't exposed to that word.
You don't know what you don't know.
Yes, she's coming. She's coming for care. She's in pain. You know, people have a hard time taking it all in. I've been talking a lot, and so it's just a lesson that you can't brush diagnoses past people and expect them to understand it completely. To expect them to understand all of the discharge paperwork and all of that follow up. Like it's a lot to take in. I spent 4 years. Holly spent 4 years post baccalaureate in school. 5 days a week, 8 hours a day. And like, you know, like we only got 2 weeks breaks in between trimesters. We didn't get summers off. And like, and now we expect a patient to just become, because we talk to them for a couple of minutes, to have the same exact understanding of these terminologies. It's not fair. We need to spend more time with patients.
Educating them. Yeah. So they can be empowered. Like you showed the beautiful example of,
just not WebMD.
Not WebMD.
Not Google. Like you can't just Google. Like I think that sometimes what people with empowering like knowledge and like, oh, I can go online and research, but it's the sources that you're reading are so important, and they can, you know, either be slanted and not factual, or they just, the patient doesn't understand, right? So like, you know, you hear people, they make jokes all the time, like, oh my God, I have this pain. I'm dying, right? Because they go on and they're like, well, my symptom is just like, you know, cancer. And you're like, no, it's that, you know, but like.
Lots of like, things cause upset stomach.
Yeah. And so it's hard because I struggle with that, you know, all the time. I feel like when talking with people, because you want to be able to provide that type of education, but everyone interprets things so differently. And, you know, there is not just a one stop shop solution for that.
Yeah, brilliantly said. And I want to switch gears a little bit. I think we've done like a really good job of breaking this down from the provider, from the patient angle. And I want to make sure we're touching on a little bit more on the business owner, business leader angle, because I see a lot of resistance to change on that end as well. And the story I tell myself is it's related to a lot of different things, but a couple of them being lack of this level of in-depth understanding. Like as a business leader, if you know healthcare is one of your top expense items, but you don't know healthcare and you don't know insurance and payer side, you're probably delegating it out to somebody who might know a little bit more than you, but to the point that you guys made beautifully, didn't have level of years of education to really understand it. I see it be like this trickle down effect. So I'd love to kind of ask you, and Holly, I'll start with you. What do you believe most leaders today have a solid enough understanding of healthcare to make sound business decisions about how to impact its cost, or what changes to strategy are needed? And can you add a little bit of color to that with your personal experience?
Yeah, I mean, I really believe that the challenge with healthcare as a business is that people have such a hard time making a decision. It's very easy to say, like, if you know, I shouldn't have to pay all this when I go to a doctor's visit, right? Or I shouldn't have to pay $1,000 for an MRI or these types of tests. But then when it comes to you, and all of a sudden you're in a health crisis, you're like, I want that MRI, I want that test, I want the doctor's time because it's personal. And I think the challenge is that like urgent care and ER medicine, I think can very much be a business because it's like, you fall and break your leg, you go in and you get it casted, right? But it's the what happens afterwards. So when you take the cast off and now you have chronic pain, you know, there's not an easy solution for that. It can be, you know, for you need to rehab, increase, you know, or decrease inflammation inside you for different ways. And I feel like that's where we struggle, is we try to say the all of healthcare can be a business. And I think honestly, medicine is the art of healing. And that's where it's hard for business leaders to really navigate that, because you can't just look at a spreadsheet and data and say, if we do this, we will make this profit, or this will increase our productivity, because it's hard to do that for the art of healing. But there are parts of medicine that can be a business.
And Frank, same question to you. Like, do you think most business leaders today, and I know you've got some experience with this in the Harvard landscape, kind of being the bridge gap between, you know, researchers, medical professionals, and business owners, Do you think there's a solid enough understanding of our healthcare system to make sound business decisions about how to impact rising costs or how to make changes to the strategy within your own business?
No.
no. Neither no, do I.
I mean, it's there are so many moving parts to the healthcare system, or as the word we all know, the healthcare diaspora. So,
I want the t-shirt.
When we come next spring, when we come for the tulips in Amsterdam, I want the diaspora
yes,
shirt.
Yes, we'll, I'll make sure to have those made up. There's a lot of moving parts. There's, you know, the ever-changing political landscape, you know, of, you know, is it going to be, you know, individual responsibility to purchase healthcare in a marketplace, you know, a payment, an insurance plan through a marketplace, or are we going to put it all on employers and, you know, employers, you know, you, that's how it used to be. If you remember, if you didn't have a job, you couldn't get insurance. I know that because I couldn't get insurance for a long time. And I think Holly had no insurance for a while and just got lucky.
I couldn't afford it.
I couldn't get it. You couldn't just buy an insurance plan. Mm-hmm. That wasn't a thing. You know, I just, you know, and this is, so it's such a foreign idea now living in Amsterdam. You know, they're like, you can lose your house if you can't afford to pay your healthcare bills. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That's the number one reason for bankruptcy. So, absolutely. So, but with, you know, we go back and forth between who's president, what is the administration, which political side are they on? And, you know, that's a big part, because, and if you're an employer, whether you run a 50,000 person company or a 5-person company, it impacts you. So, that's a lot to handle, but then try to understand things like, oh, well, we could save costs if we introduce a high deductible health plan. And then the patient is now has more responsibility. But then patients, they're like, I have a $5,000. That means I have to first pay $5,000 out of pocket, even though I'm paying a monthly premium. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you do. And you want me to get that MRI that's $1,800. I got to find $1,800. And I make $16, $17 an hour. That's, you know,
highway robbery.
And that's a very common story. I think $17, $18 is a little bit generous too for what some people are paid, you know, in the $12, $13 an hour. How are they going to afford that, you know, when they're full time?
And why is the system rigged against people who are making the average rate and of pay in our country? You know, like you said, in Chicago, like, you were in a very high end bougie place in Chicago. So you had access to the clientele who could afford to pay that 90% that the insurance wasn't paying. But at the same time, like, that's not the average person. And as people and healers and humans with hearts for people, everybody deserves health. Everyone. Not have to give up everything else in your life financially for it.
Food.
I mean, I can use myself. Like, I've had very real financial struggles as a result of the amount of healthcare procedures that I've had. And I've always done really well, like, and come from a family that's well off. And I have every resource, like, every privilege, truly. I'm very, very aware of that. And it's something that's on my heart. And part of why I have such a service to help others is because I have every privilege. But it is still caused unbelievable toll on my happiness, my physical, financial, mental health and wellness. Like, that's the foundation of having a happy, stable life. And my journey in healthcare has affected all of those. And so that's why I'm passionate about Revolutionary and really sharing on this podcast more stories around the how to change. Frank, you hit the nail on the head with no, just the answer being no, people don't know enough. And you're not going to from this podcast or from any other podcast, you're not going to, but there are people and there are solutions out there. And so I'm encouraging you to reach out, let us connect you with those resources. Let us help educate you with people who really know the ins and outs and can spend the time with you. Before we wrap up today though, on that vein, you know, kind of this healthcare revolution and being a revolutionary, I always like to ask everybody, and I'll start with you, Holly, again, what does being revolutionary mean to you?
I would say just, I feel like it's being passionate and fabulous, like being revolutionary. I mean, I feel like that's what I would say for me is that, you know, I've just always had a desire to help people, and I've understood along my journey that you have to resist to get change and you have to resist to get answers. I mean, I think like probiotics, I feel like is a great example. Like people, the hippy dippy people that like they were in communes and they were just like doing their own kombucha and stuff like that. And like years ago, people were like, oh, those people are on the outside, right? And now, I mean, you have GI specialists that are recommending you take a probiotic, mm-hmm. right? It's gone from the outside to the mainstream. And so like, I constantly look at things when people are like, oh, this treatment sounds crazy. And I'm like, oh, well, I mean, maybe to the mainstream, but you know, give it a few years or do some research and it might actually be the thing. And mm-hmm. that's what I find, I think is what me like, being revolutionary is about, like pushing that forward and being yeah. fabulous.
I love it. Pushing through resistance to change with your fabulous self. Frank, can you top that? I'm kidding.
Fabulous, what, Frankie.
What does being revolutionary mean to you?
I guess in terms of healthcare, revolutionary for me means just that, going back to health care. And what does care of health mean? Versus sick care. And, you know, there's both. I mean, certainly when someone is sick, they need to be cared for, but there's a lot of things like the hippy dippies are doing that we can do to care for health. You know, what can we do to stay healthy? Because no matter how financially privileged any of us are or have been or want to be, no amount of money can compensate for lack of health. I mean, you know, it's if you're not well, it doesn't matter. So how do we stay well? And what are things that we could do to focus on preventative medicine, keeping your body strong, you know, and what is health? I mean, sort of that, you know, what we think about, what we put in us, and how we physically interact with the world.
Yeah, you know, everything we consume.
Yeah, the physical, mental, and chemical. Like those, like, to me, that's the other triad of health. Like, mm-hmm. And again, it comes down to the thoughts we think, what is our internal narrative? How can we get better support for the way we talk to ourselves? Because my gosh, I think if we aired or if we had like a little screen across our forehead of the thoughts we're saying about ourselves, we'd probably be arrested for self-abuse. Like, you know, just, you know, because we can be really hard
terrible.
On ourselves.
So mean.
And, you know, and again, you know, the chemicals, what do we put in ourselves? You know, what are we breathing? What are we eating? You know, and then how do we interact in our physical world? Are we doing things to support our body, you know, our muscles, our joints, and you know, our core strength, all those things. Like, what are we doing to maintain that as we age? Because gravity, she's a bitch, and she just keeps pushing us down. So we have to work hard. So.
My hips.
So yeah, gravity. Yeah. Gravity's everywhere. So
yeah. It's
like, yeah. So, everything seems to.
We're all 21, right?
That's yeah. Well, age is yeah. numbers are literally made up. Like, we collectively agreed that, like, okay, like this means that, and we're all just gonna say that they mean the same thing. Okay, let's all agree to it. So, I say age is just a number. You are however old you want to be. I believe we're running out of time today. I could go on all day with you guys. Honestly, thank you so much for sharing your experience, your candor, your passion for healing, bringing a much needed perspective from the provider end of, hey, it's not just doctors getting richer and richer or not wanting to spend time with patients. It's they need to feed their families too, by the way. So let's talk about, you know, the issues that are impacting everybody. Before we wrap up though, I do want to give you guys kind of a last chance. Let me know if there's a question that I didn't ask today that you wish I had.
You know, I think you kind of asked it, but it's kind of the, you know, what I think if every doctor sort of asked the question regularly, like, why did you want to be a doctor in the first mm-hmm. place? Just to go back to that, just as a touchstone, and just to be like, oh yeah, that's why I wanted to help people. Like, most of us, that's really why. I mean, some people did it because their father, grandfather, whatever did it. Like, there's that, but that's, I think it's mostly to help people. And I think to just sort of underscore that question and underscore, I think what I believe is the most common reason, and let's not lose sight of that, and what I think is that revolution of focusing on how do we keep people healthy and how do we institutionalize that and normalize that.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much. Such a pleasure always to speak with you, to see you guys, and to hear kind of your experience. So thank you for educating all of us today, and have a fantastic day.
Well, wonderful. Thank you for having us. Bye-bye.